Apollo 14, this is Houston at GET of 28 hours and 30 minutes. You are approximately 1,180 nautical miles. That's 1,180 nautical miles away from the S-4B. If you'd care to look for it, we suggest you use a P-52 program with a star code of zero and load the following numbers in noun 88 if you're ready to copy.
Go ahead.
Roger. Noun 88 values. R1 minus 31505 minus 87189er minus 37491. Read back over.
Okay, we'll plug in minus 31505 minus 87189er minus 37491.
Roger, your readback's correct, and we'll probably at the end of the launch vehicle systems debriefing here have some more numbers for you if you want to if you don't acquire it on this first pass.
Okay.
And we're ready to press on with the debriefing. If you've got your flight plan handy, you can just proceed down through the questions, and we'll interrupt if we find anything that's unclear, or if you'd prefer, I can ask them to you in a panel discussion type thing, and you can answer back, over.
We'll go ahead with the flight plan. Stand by 1 minute.
Roger.
Okay, Houston, on question number one regarding significant changes in noise level. The only change in noise level we noticed was during the first part of the launch on S1C when we had the initial noise of ignition and the buildup in noise during the max Q. And, of course, the associated
Houston, I think we're coming up on an antenna switchover point. You seem to be fading down into the mud.
Okay. You mean now, Houston?
Okay, we're reading you better. Signal strength-wise, Al, we still seem to be getting a little bit of breakup from your comm carrier. Can you reposition the mic, see if that helps any?
Okay, I have the mic right in front of my mouth right now. Is that better?
Roger. I think we better take it from the top again.
Okay, from the top. The only significant change in noise level we noticed was that associated with the burning of the engine in the atmosphere. That is the ignition, of course, buildup of noise there. And the noise level increased through max Q and then a drop off. Other than that, with respect to the noise itself, we had no problems at all in their communications at any time during the stages of the plane.
That's affirmative. Press on.
Hey, number two. On the F1C, we noticed no significant changes in noise level and vibration. I don't know what we just discussed. F1C, we felt was fine ride, nothing unexpected. The S2, We noticed a change in vibration, a sort of a slight pogo, which started at 8+40. Nothing really of any great magnitude. And on S4B to orbit burn, we noticed no significant changes in the noise of vibration level. We noticed nothing unusual on S4B during TLI ignition. However, we did notice beginning of a slight hum, low hum, or buzz toward the end of a TLI burn. That's it for number two. Any questions there?
We have no questions right now on that, Al. We're closing our loop down here with the Huntsville Operations Support Center, so it takes us a few seconds to a minute or so to get a response back. Why don't you press on with question number three, and if we get any queries, why, we'll reopen the previous ones.
Okay, and number three, nothing unusual on which we had not been briefed. As a matter of fact, it went pretty much according to the way we had expected it. So all of the events mentioned in question three, that is ignition and staging, engine shutdowns and mixture ratios, and so on, we did experience a little more abruptness with a cutoff of S2. The S2 CECO, I think, we came out of touch a little more than we expected. Otherwise, everything was pretty much the way we'd kind of planned on it. Question three.
Roger. Question four.
Okay, Stu's ready for you on question four.
Okay, Bruce, I got a good look at that shroud. Of course, station keeping with S4B, and you couldn't see all of it, but as we moved around, you could see a good portion of it back around behind the limb. And every place that I could see, and Ed also, and Al was looking through the hatch windows part of the time, and everything looked just tight as a drum. We saw no loose pieces of the shroud anywhere, nothing out of the ordinary. And after SEP, as the after ejection and the booster came into view, came into my window pretty much of a head-on view, and we were out a little ways, but there was no visible damage at all to the shroud at any time. And like I say, I think we got a real good look at it the time we spin around it.
Roger, we copy.
Okay, going on to number five, we experienced good communication throughout the entire powered flight and launch. All of us were able to hear the ground on all the calls, and we had no comm problems at all.
Right.
How about you? Do you have any comm problems from us? How about you? Do you have any comm problems from us?
Negative. We experienced no comm problems.
Okay, question number six about the visible bending. Stu, you want to cover that?
Okay, we didn't see any anything unusual other than those that you called. And when you called the bending while we were station keeping, well, of course, it came on, rather beautiful sight. And the only other thing was when you gave a mark for the APS evasive burn, why I noticed the booster venting, and it appeared to be the same area as it had been venting during the station keeping phase, and the answer came back that that was expected and so forth, and that was the only thing out of the ordinary. Other than that, everything was fine, and all the other vents you called.
Okay, on to number seven, and I guess that one may still be open.
Yeah, I was just trying to whip off a fast answer for you on that one, but We don't have any, so I guess Al will tell you the last time that we saw it.
Well, I guess the last time we saw the 4P was with the eyeball. I think that is. And it was during the repulsive spinning. It was kind of a tough angle for us to see because of it was just very low on the edge of window number one. However, turning on it was good. It was stable when it was bending, near as I could tell, approximately, a couple of miles away. We took a few pictures of it with an Hasselblad, so we may be able to see the beautiful conical-shaped pattern coming out of the vent. But as far as control is concerned, it was going in the right direction and appeared to be stable.
Roger, we copy.
Okay, number eight. Who do you want to take that one?
Okay, I guess the guidance obviously was good, and the velocity was real fine. It looked like during the boost phase, they were running maybe two and a half miles, maybe 3 miles low along my profile. Looked rather consistent, but we obviously arrived at the right place, so and the velocity cutoffs were right in the money, and the TLI guidance, I think, was sort of within 10 feet, 17 or something like that. You've got the numbers, but it looked real good, and the only thing I can comment there was it looked to me like we were going into Earth orbit insertion, maybe a couple, three low, pretty much on the profile.
Roger.
All the way on the profile, I should say.
Number 9.
Roger, go ahead with number 9.
Okay, your ideal ball at ignition was as advertised at 8.5 degrees. After ignition went to the normal pitch down, the ball unlocked very close to zero. And then as the burn progressed, east on up to about a plus 1 degree. Then slowly on back down to zero, and then of course took the pitch down. Just prior to the cutoff, and I would say somewhere around 2 or 3 degrees negative, and that is 357, 358 in the ball prior to cutoff.
Okay, and we've got one more write-in, question number 10. And it's based on...
Okay, I'll take that one, Bruce.
Okay.
Okay, Bruce, that came from my comment, and as we were station-keeping and watching the binning, it looked to me like the booster had picked up a little right yaw as I looked at it. I meant moving left on me. But then I just mentioned it looked like it was moving over a little, but then later on I decided that was just the scatter of the two vehicles' dead bands, because the IU or the S4B dead band all the time was solid as a rock, even during the binning. And after all that binning, when I went back to try the other dockings, I expected to have to change my attitude a little bit. And as it turned out, the attitude was still right within a degree. So that was just a call that appeared to at that time. But the S4B vented from both sides, and it was steady. And I think I was just picking up the movement of the dead bands of the two vehicles.
Okay, Stu, thank you.
Right.
And while the Huntsville people are closing the loop here, we had previously given you a flight plan update concerning your wastewater dump at 3:00 hours plus 15 minutes. And our update was that you dumped to 0% We'd like now to modify that to a nominal dump to 25% on the wastewater, over.
Okay, we are now modified. 25% it shall be.
Roger out.
Could you tell me about ALSCOM? You mentioned some dropouts in EKG prior to launch. Apparently you're still not seeing those. Are they any, however, associated with these voice dropouts you're talking about today?
Stand by, please. Fourteen, this is Houston. Our belief is that there's no correlation at the present time between your earlier EKG problems and the current degraded comm through Al's comm carrier. We would like to suggest when you have the chance that Al try using the spare comm carrier and see if that improves communications.
Okay. Well,
this is Houston. We've received some inquiries regarding your answer to question number two. The Huntsville operation people would like to get a little more detail on this slight hum or buzz. Was it actually an acoustic or audible noise, or was it felt through the structure of the spacecraft? And can you give us approximately the time that it commenced and duration, that is, did it proceed until TLI cutoff?
Stand by, one use.
Roger.
Okay, Bruce, I think the, or is it kind of hard to describe, I guess, and maybe make ourselves clear, but it definitely was not an acoustic buzz. It was a high-frequency buzz that we felt through the structure, and I'd say it probably started, and this is an approximation, say 2 minutes into the TLI burn.
Okay, and continued through the balance of the burn?
Pretty much so, yes. Just about the same level. I wouldn't say that it increased any significant amount.
I realize this is sort of hard to put your finger on. Is there any way you can quantify the level or give us some feeling for how much of a, how high the level was?
No, no, I think that's pretty tough, Bruce. In fact, you know, the burn was going so well and the ride was so smooth that, you know, we had time to pick it up. I suspect that, you know, it was low enough level that if you had something else on your mind, you wouldn't even have noticed it.
Did this just sort of start abruptly, or did it build up from the background, do you think?
Well, it feels it was a build-up, and I'm not sure, so let's vote that it was a build-up, and that seems to be the majority. Yeah, and it just came on kind of slow and came up, stayed at a low level, and was there.
Okay, and the only other question we got back in is that at 8 plus 40, this pogo type thing that you mentioned was, could you give us a little more detail on the direction of motion of it and amplitude? Any more elaboration that you have on that would be appreciated.
Okay, I guess I called out the time on that one in the cockpit. There was no doubt but what it was a slight pogo, and I think it was longitudinal, and as far as amplitude, I'm trying to think back to some of those pogo tests I wrote on the shake table, but they were of such high level that I couldn't compare them to this. But it was a pogo. It started just about that time, because when I felt it, I looked at the clock, and it was not of...
Fourteen Houston, we had an antenna change over here, and in Houston, how do you read?
Okay, how do you read, Bruce?
Loud and clear, Stu. How do you read me?
Oh, you're 5 square. The static's died down. And as I was saying, there was no question but what it was a low amplitude POGO starting right at 8 plus 40. However, the magnitude was low enough that it was not affected, did not affect any of our voices. And, you know, a fairly low level will do that. So I'd say, you know, it was pretty small, was not of any concern, but picked it up just because, you know, I'm thinking about POGO, I guess.
Roger, thank you. And Stu, did that last all the way until shutdown of the S2, or did it die back out?
Bruce, I can't give you a positive answer. None of us can. My impression is it was there all the way, but that data really isn't a very good input.
Okay, thank you, and I believe this concludes our discussion on the booster questions.
Okay.